Thank you, Alexei. That's a lot of food for thought and so forth. What we're going to do is take a few questions and only take about enough for about 10 minutes. But I do think there needs to be some questions coming from this panel because of this absolutely vitally important material that's been given to us this morning.
All right. Let me capitalise on the short question time by asking you both questions. First, to you, Professor Tolaraya. With the sanctions on Russia and the economic impact of the collapse of oil, etc., we know that the Russian government has been trying to slash the budget, and you've got challenges like the Far East and developing it. What do you say about the role of the BRICS-related financial institutions in meeting those development challenges, like the New Development Bank, but also the Asian Infrastructure Bank? And what I'm getting at is, here in Australia, we're debating joining the Asian Infrastructure Bank, but one of the biggest powers in Asia is Russia. Is Russia also planning to join it at all? Secondarily, would you comment on the applicability for Russia today of the Malaysian approach to the 1997 attack on its currency with exchange controls and internally generated credit, as well, because of your expertise in East Asia, the usefulness of the South Korean experience with directed credit for industrial development? And then if I can just give Dr. Muraviev some food for thought, just some questions. You said that there are no winners in nuclear war, which, of course, is the reassurance that there won't be one. But if one side believes they can win, doesn't that undermine that reassurance? And I also wondered if you can comment on the connection between economic crisis and strategic conflict, such as, you know, Europe has become more bellicose in terms of NATO as its economy has got worse, and we see that as driving the strategic crisis today. And then finally, just something I've always wondered, would you agree that if the West was really serious in taking on challenges such as ISIS in the Middle East, the most effective thing it could do would be to reach out to Russia for cooperation? Thank you.
In fact, Western sanctions have not that much to do with the current crisis we're experiencing in Russia. I would say Saudi Arabia is more to blame because they want to bring down the price of oil to fight the shale revolution in the US, to put the shale gas and oil out of business. And that's why they're trying to keep the low oil prices. Well, Russian economy unfortunately depends on the revenues from oil exports. And therefore, our currency, ruble, has fallen two times. Really reminds me of the so-called IMF crisis of 1997 in Southeast Asia, including Malaysia. But in this case, there was a deliberate attack against Russian currency, against local Asian currencies. In Russia's case, ruble is actually tied to the price of oil. So actually, one barrel of oil costs 3,700 rubles approximately. So whenever the price fell in dollars, the currency rate of exchange fell accordingly. And of course, it severely undermines imports, and it also severely undermines the filling up of state budget. So we have to slash the expenditures, have to close or not to start new projects. And this is all very bad, but unfortunately we are ourselves to blame because we had at least 20 years to reform our economy and put it on a more industrial basis. on a more productive basis, not just depend on oil and gas exports. But that never happened. Now at least when we have this crisis, the silver cloud has a silver lining. I hope that we'll start rebuilding our industry and rebuilding our economy. So sanctions added to that. But at the same time, strangely, sanctions do help Russian government and President Putin, because if such a crisis would have resulted just from the wrong economic policies, which accounts for 90% of the current economic situation, then government and Putin would have been blamed. Now the Western blamed with the sanctions, and Russian people are united. We'll live through hard times. We'll break through this economic situation. So I think, what is it? BRICS. And trade with BRICS so far plays not such a big role. But now with this, in this crisis situation, there are two tendencies. First, we substitute the imports from Europe by the imports from BRICS, especially that of food and such fruits and vegetables, and well, consumer goods. Fruits and vegetables come from South Africa or Brazil. It's easy with the current communication transportation network. Consumer goods come from China mostly, and India. So we are reorienting our imports to these countries, and that's good for them, and it's bad for Europe. But that's the trouble of their own making. Second, investment, Russian capitals are now looking for new lucrative markets in the East, and we are also trying to turn to the East in economics and exporting our products to China and East Asia in general. And third, we have some more mature cooperation in finance with these countries. For example, the reserve arrangement for the currency. Currency support we now have for the BRICS, and actually we were doing this with China on a bilateral basis by getting Chinese yuan loans to stabilize our currency, and we are doing now the trade with China in yuan and ruble basis, not in US dollars, so that also speeded up this process of integration. Thank you. I forgot about Asia Infrastructure Development Bank. We were not planning to join this, but now maybe we can reconsider, but it takes some time for Russian government process, at least a year, I think.
Okay, I'll answer your questions in reverse order, starting with ISIL. I mean, the simple answer is absolutely. I mean, transnational terrorism is a global threat, and I think the Russians published intelligence earlier this year suggesting that out of 40 or something thousand foreign fighters fighting for ISIL, about 11,000 come from the former Soviet Union. So whilst we're going ballistic about our certain members of our community traveling there and bringing hypothetically back home with experience, the Russians and other members of the former Soviet community face exactly the same challenge. So in this sense, if we really want to eradicate it, then we need to bring all members. Also, even with regards to what the Russians are doing there, I don't think we really understand the extent of their contribution. I mean, before the coalition decided to launch airstrikes on targets in Syria and Iraq, the Russians supplied the Iraqi military with advanced military hardware, including strike aircraft, which once became operational, was sent into battle immediately and managed the Iraqi military to withhold some of the ISIL offenses, but somehow we just pretend that it's not happening in this sense. Economic crisis and strategic conflict, yeah, there is direct link with that, because war is a business. It's a dirty business, but war can be viewed as a strategic diversion for problems at home. It can also instigate some some elements of the industry, naturally the defense industry, so and mobilize communities, etc. So, or for that reason, you know, rid of debt, etc. You can simply so it's, I mean, it's been long established that economic crises contribute to instability and can trigger conflicts. No winners in the nuclear war. Yes, when there is a notion of so-called mutually assured destruction, MAD, that's something that both the United States and the Soviet Union came to realization. Well, certainly the United States came to realization at the turn of the 70s when the Soviets caught up with them. However, there is always this inclination to achieve superiority. And in this sense, I want to make a reference to President Obama's initiative of achieving so-called global nuclear zero. When he talked about, why don't we just strip ourselves of nuclear weapons and weapons of mass destruction? Well, on one hand, it sounds really nice and promising, but it happens at the time, and this is why I can explain why the Russians resisted, because it happens at the time with the United States military developing new generations of conventional system, which would give them same capability as nuclear weapons without necessarily going nuclear. So in this sense, this is a way how to overcome MAD and achieve superiority. And that actually can provoke a new arms race, technological arms race, because other powers like Russia, like China, are now seeking to acquire similar capabilities or come up with asymmetric response. So currently we live through the period of relative strategic parity, but there is always this temptation on both sides to have a bit of an upper hand, because whilst I'm still doubtful that we'll ever see a thermonuclear war, well, if we'll see it, it will be a really short observation. Certainly getting the upper hand allows you to engage in political and military blackmail, which continues to remain one of pressure points or mechanisms to pursue agendas. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much.